I'm here, Hennessy.
Well, we meet again. Only this time you don't have the drop on me. We meet even.
Not entirely even. You already have your pistol drawn.
Yeah, I do, don't I?
Even as he was finishing his comment, Hennessy pulled the trigger. From his prone position on the ground, Matt aimed at Hennessy. Looking up, Matt saw a puff of gun smoke drifting from behind the false front of the hardware store that was right across from the saloon. He ran toward the side of the street, then dived behind a watering trough just as the second shot was fired.
Is Hennessy dead?
Yes.
I figured he was.
Coleman was killed when you escaped. Boone was hanged. And Hennessy is lying here in the street. That means you must be Taylor.
I'm Taylor. I'm the only one left.
You want to come down? Give yourself up?
No, I don't reckon I want to do that. I done been sentenced to hang. I got nothing to gain by giving myself up.
Matt raised himself up just far enough to peer over the top of the water trough.
Shit!
Whew! Nearly got you that time.
Yeah, you did. Taylor, you part Indian?
What? No! Why'd you ask?
Was Hennessy?
No.
Matt lay there for a moment longer. Then he took off a boot and slipped it over the point of his other foot. Then put his hat on it. Lifting his leg so that the boot and hat were above the trough, he leaned out around the end and looked up toward the false front. He saw Taylor step to the side of the false front and raise his rifle to his shoulder, aiming at Matt's hat. Taylor dropped the rifle and slapped his hands over his chest. Then he tumbled forward off the roof of the hardware store.
Damn, that hurts.
I guess it beats hanging, though. Don't you think?
Yes, I'm pretty sure it beats hanging.
Well, if you look at it like that... I sort of came out ahead in this, didn't I?
So, there were two of them, were there? I should have suspected that. Don't know how many men would actually call you out to a fair fight. Damn, you don't think there are any more, do you?
Not from this bunch. Taylor was the last of them. But I do have someone else after me.
Strayhorn was sitting in the corner of the saloon nursing a glass of green whiskey that had been colored with rusty nails and flavored with a few drops of kerosene. It had been 3 weeks since he, Teach, and Decker had conducted their raid on the Buttram Ranch, and once again, he found himself short of money. No-Nose came and sat down at the table.
What is it, No-Nose? We ain't such good friends that you just come over to chat.
You're a pretty smart man, ain't ya? Yep, you got me pegged all right.
So what is it? Someone you want me to kill? What?
Someone I want you to kill? Hell no, Strayhand. I ain't want anybody killed. Anybody I want killed, I do that myself, and you know that.
Then what do you want?
I figured maybe you and me go on a deal together.
Why would I want to go in on a deal with you?
I don't know. Why would you? Well, maybe because nothing you've tried recently has worked out for you.
I'm doing all right.
How much money did you get from holding up that train?
What train?
Strayhorn, there ain't a man or whore in Dorina when ain't laughed at the mess you made with that train robbery. You managed to get 4 good men killed and you came away with how much money? Oh, wait, I can answer that. You came away with none, you dumb son of a bitch.
The problem came up.
Yeah, I know who the problem was. It was Matt Jensen, the same one to kill Hennessy and Taylor.
Wait a minute. You telling me Hennessy and Taylor are dead?
Oh, you didn't know about that?
No.
Yeah, they was killed by Matt Jensen. That happened in Colorado Springs a couple weeks ago.
I hadn't heard anything about that. You sure that's true?
Yeah, I'm sure. Polly Moore wrote in this morning with the news.
And you believe him?
It ain't just what he said. He brought the newspaper with the story.
I'll be damned. Well, the dumb sons of bitches wanted to go off on their own, so I reckon what happened to them ain't none of my concern.
That's the way I look at it. So tell me, would you like to team up with me on a job?
What's a job?
No, I ain't ready to tell you that. Not do you agree that we're gonna work together.
Well, if you have the idea for a job, why do you even need me?
Because this job needs more than one person. and you got Teach and Decker with you.
So what you're saying is, you don't just want me, you want all of us.
Yes.
Is there enough money for that?
Yes. How much money does the governor of Colorado have?
How much money does the governor of Colorado have? What the hell does that have to do with anything? What are you talking about?
I tell you about it when you agree to come in with me.
All right. Let me hear it.
The Denver Depot was teeming with activity as trains arrived and departed. Out in the car shed, smoke and steam swirled between the several trains before drifting up to gather in little clouds under the high roof. The shed was heavy with the aroma of smoke and expended steam, as well as various prepared foods being offered by the many peddlers who were working the crowd. Millie St. Cyr, Norma Jean Proud, Sue Kendall, and Annie Jones had come to see Lane McKenzie off. But a moment earlier, Millie had disappeared. Now she came back, holding an artificial flower.
I saw this in a little shop when we came in, and I knew I had to get it for you.
Oh, how lovely. I shall wear this on the very first day I teach school.
And think of Denver and all your friends out here.
I will. I will never forget any of you, and I will think of all of you often.
Oh, I'm so glad your uncle invited you to come to Denver.
Oh, yes, I am too. It's been a wonderful summer. I hate going back east.
You wouldn't have to go back. Your uncle is a governor of Colorado. I know he could get you a job teaching school here in Denver.
It's tempting. It really is. But I've been out here for almost 5 months now, and I'm anxious to see my mother and father. Also, it wouldn't be fair to the Cairo school system if I left now. They're counting on me to take the job I contracted for.
I know. It's just that we've become such good friends that I don't want to see you go. Oh, I know something that might change your mind. Think about this. If you stay here, you will probably see Matt Jensen again.
As if that meant anything.
I know. Your contract says you must stay single. But you have to admit, you probably won't find another man like Mr. Jensen back in Cairo, Illinois.
It doesn't matter what my contract says about getting married. It is quite obvious that Mr. Jensen has his own life to live. And quite frankly, so do I. So I'm afraid that using Matt Jensen as an incentive to keep me out here won't work.
Well, you can't say that I didn't try.
That's my train. I guess I'd better be boarding.
What about your luggage?
Uncle John took care of that for me. Oh, I wonder where he is. I certainly don't want to leave without telling him goodbye and thanking him for such a wonderful summer.
Here he comes.
Lane embraced her uncle as he came up to her.
Oh, Uncle John, I'm glad you're back. I was afraid I might have to leave before telling you goodbye.
You needn't have worried about that. I wasn't about to let that happen. Come along, I'll show you your car.
Oh, I don't want to board until I have to. I'm still visiting with my friends.
Well, they can come, too. They can come onto the car with you.
Oh, we would just be in the way of the other passengers who are boarding.
No, you won't. Trust me.
Puzzled as to what mystery her uncle was concealing, Lane and her friends followed him out of the depot into the car shed. They moved along the platform at the end of the tracks, passing trains that had been backed into position until they reached track number 7. They walked practically the full length of the train, passing day coaches, sleepers, and Wagner parlor cars. Then, they reached the first car just behind the baggage car. Beautifully varnished, the car glistened. It differed in appearance from the other cars because there were fewer windows, and the windows it did have were larger and had curtains.
Here you go, my dear.
What is this? I don't understand.
This is my private car. I've made arrangements for you to be able to use it all the way to Cairo.
But can you do that?
Of course I can. This car belongs to me personally, not to the state of Colorado. All it requires is that I make arrangements with the various railroad companies to pull it. And those arrangements have all been made.
Oh my!
Can we see the inside of it?
Yes, that's why I invited all of you to come see her aboard. Climb aboard!
Lane had never seen anything as lush as the interior of the car. The walls were painted red and liberally hung with red drapery. A red overstuffed sofa sat on one side of the car, while two red cushioned white wicker chairs flanked a marble-topped desk on the opposite side. At the back of the car was a separate room with walls of walnut. Inside this room, which could be completely closed off, was a bed.
Oh, It's absolutely beautiful.
I thought you might enjoy it.
The governor took an envelope from his pocket.
And, ladies, if you would like, you can ride as far as Pueblo with her. Here are tickets for your return trip.
Oh, I wish I had known this earlier so I could tell my family.
I've already spoken to your families, and they have all given their permission.
A young black man dressed in white came into the car then.
Governor, the train's gonna pull out in 5 minutes.
Thank you, Travis. Ladies, this is Travis. He's the porter who's assigned especially to this car. He will deliver your meals to you and take care of anything you might need.
Governor Rout, with a final wave, stepped down onto the long, narrow brick path that stretched between this train and the train on track number 6. He stayed there until the train pulled out, while the girls moved to the windows to wave goodbye. 10 minutes later, the train was on the main track, picking up speed as it left the city of Denver behind.
Are one of you ladies Miss Proud?
Yes, I'm Miss Proud.
Travis held up a box.
This was delivered to the train just before we left. The man said it came from your mom.
Oh, it's my tatting. Oh, and there's enough here for all of us to do.
Excitedly, the young women went through the box, then accepted the shuttles and pieces of work from Norma Jean.
Oh, no. I would just make a mess of it. Oh, tish-tosh, you can do it. You'll help.
For the next 3 hours, the young women tatted and talked. Lane tried to keep up with them, but was able to do so only because one of her friends would always take her work from her to get her through difficult spots. At noon, Travis came into the car pushing a cart on which there were 4 covered trays. Travis set the table with elegant china, sparkling crystal, and shining silver. Then he lifted off the covers to present the meal of baked ham, glazed carrots, creamed Swiss chard, and a dessert of chocolate cake.
Oh my, what a feast!
After a long and leisurely lunch, the girls spent the remaining 2 hours in conversation, laughing at stories they shared from their youth and reminiscing over the summer just passed.
Ladies, we're coming into Pueblo.
Oh dear. This is where we get off.
Quickly, they gathered up the tatting work and put it back into the box. Norma Jean started to pick it up, but Travis reached out to take it from her.
No need for you to have to carry something that heavy. I'll find someone to handle it for you.
Oh, thank you, Travis. Oh, wait.
The girls exchanged tearful goodbyes and extracted a promise from Lane that she would return for another visit next summer. Lane watched them through the window, waving at them as they hurried to catch a train back to Denver.
Oh, don't I have to change trains here?
No, all we have to do is just stay put. A switch engine will come pick us up directly and take us over to another track, where we'll be hooked onto a train going east.
Oh, that certainly makes traveling easy, doesn't it?
Yes, it surely does.
A moment later, Lane felt the bump as the car was picked up by a switch engine, then moved to another track. A short while after that, they were hooked onto a new engine, and, as dark was falling, they pulled out of the station. After the others left the train, Lane settled down to make the rest of the trip by herself. She had to admit that the car was luxurious. If she had been traveling in one of the regular coaches, she might be uncomfortable, but at least she would have someone to talk to. In this car, especially now that all her friends had left, she was all alone. There were a couple of books to read, but she found that reading while riding made her nauseous. She tried to entertain herself by looking at the scenery through the window, but the eastern half of Colorado offered little in the way of interest. She had thought that perhaps she could meet someone over lunch or dinner, but to her chagrin, Travis delivered the meals to her. By the time it was 9 o'clock, Lane was ready to go to bed, not so much because she was tired as because she was bored. She had Travis turn down the bed for her, then slipped in between the sheets, and, with the rhythmic clacking of the wheels providing a soothing background noise, fell into an early slumber. No Nose Nelson, Strayhorn, Teach, Decker, and Paulie Moore waited in the dark alongside the track.
What makes you so sure the train is going to stop here?
The train has to have water, don't it?
I reckon so.
No-Nose pointed to the water tower that stood alongside the railroad tracks.
Well, there's the water. That means the train will stop.
I sure wish the moon wasn't so bright.
Don't worry none about the moon. Once we have what we come for, we'll be able to ride out here with no problem. There won't be nobody following us.
The money, you mean?
What?
You said once we have what we came for. You talking about the money, right?
This train is carrying a lot of money.
I don't know.
You don't know? What do you mean you don't know? What the hell are we doing here if you don't know whether or not the train is carrying any money?
Because we ain't here for the money.
That's it. I ain't standing out in the middle of nowhere in the middle of the night waiting to rob a train that ain't carrying no money.
Teach is right, No-Nose. You said you'd tell us what you had in mind when the time came. Well, seems to me like the time's come.
Here it comes. You may get in position to stay out of sight until I give the word.
What are we doing here, No-Nose? If we ain't robbing this train, what are we doing here?
I tell you this, just go along with me, and there'll be more money than you can imagine.
All right. We come this far, we may as well see it through. But if this turns out to be nothing, you don't have to worry about the law coming after you, No-Nose, because I'll kill you my own self.
Damn, I can hear it, but I still don't see no train yet.
You will. Just keep looking that way.
Remember, nobody makes a move until I give the order. We don't want to take a chance on being seen.
No-Nose walked up onto the track and stayed there until all the others were in position. He looked to see if any of them could be seen from the approaching train. Then, satisfied that they could not, he ran back down to join them. He watched the train approach. The train got slower and slower still until finally it approached the water tower. The engineer brought his train to a stop in exactly the right place. By now, the fireman was already standing on the tender, reaching for the line that hung down from the curved mouth of the long waterspout.
Now!
All five men rushed toward the engine. The engineer, who was leaning out the cab window, saw the men approaching and jumped back with a start.
Who are you? What do you want?
We want you to climb down from that engine.
No-Nose pointed his pistol at the fireman, who was standing on the tender, taking on water.
Because if you don't, we're going to kill your fireman.
No, don't shoot him. I'm coming down.
The engineer climbed down onto the ground alongside the track and stood there beside the huge engine as it continued to vent steam through its relief valve.
I don't know why you stopped our train. We ain't carrying any money.
I know you ain't carrying no money. That ain't what we're after.
Well, then, I don't understand. What are you after?
We're after the person that's in that private car.
Are you serious? There's nobody in that car but one young woman.
Yeah, the governor's niece.
The governor's niece? That's what we came here for?
Yeah.
Why?
Think about it. Remember when I asked you how much money the governor has?
Yes.
Well, we're about to get some of it. I figure the governor's gonna be willing to pay a lot to get her back.
When the train made the stop for water, Lane, who was asleep in the bedroom of the governor's private car, was only vaguely aware. She was too comfortable and too tired from all the packing and the preparation for her return to Cairo to pay too much attention to it. Lane thought of the fireman standing there in the middle of the night and, by contrast, it made her own condition seem even more comfortable. She was not aware of the drama being played out just outside the train. Even as she was drifting back to sleep, No-Nose, Strayhorn, and Teach were climbing onto the private car. The car was dimly lit by two low-burning gimbal-mounted lanterns, one on either side. The lanterns illuminated the luxuriousness of the car, the plush sofa, the overstuffed chairs, and a table on which sat a silver tray of pastries.
Whew, damn! Would you look at this? You ever see a railroad car like this before?
No. Pay attention to what you're doing.
Suddenly, a porter appeared from a small corridor at the back of the car.
What's going on here? What are you men doing on this car?
Where's she at?
Get off this car!
Inside the small bedroom, Lane was awakened by the loud sound of the gunshot. She sat up in her bed.
Oh, what is it? What's going on?
Suddenly, the door to the bedroom compartment was jerked open. She opened her mouth to scream, but one of the men stuck the barrel of his gun in her mouth.
If you scream, I'll pull the trigger.
Lane stared at him with eyes that were wide open with fear, but she made no sound.
That's a good girl. Now get up. What'd you say?
I said I'm not dressed. I'm still in my nightgown.
Well, get dressed. We'll wait.
I'll have to take my nightgown off.
Then do it.
But I don't have anything on under my nightgown.
Good. Do it, or I'll shoot you here now.
Lane pulled the nightgown over her head, exposing her nudity.
Damn, Strayhorn, look at that. I ain't never seen nothing like that.
You've seen naked women before.
All I ever seen was whores. I might have thought I'd seen naked women before, but I tell you true, I ain't never seen nothing like this.
Finally, with every inch of her skin burning in embarrassment, Lane got dressed. She looked at the men who were ogling her.
What now?
Now, you come with us.
Hey, no. Seeing her naked like that has got me all excited here. Are we going to have us any fun with this woman here?
It all depends.
It depends on what?
Whether or not the governor pays what we're going to ask him.
The outlaws followed Mustang Creek south to a small cabin that was no more than 2 miles from where they had removed Lane from the train. Lane had ridden on the horse in front of Decker, who was selected because he was the smallest. Once they reached the cabin, they tied her up, then tied her to a bed that had a dirty mattress, but no sheets or blankets. Lane's back and legs were cramped, and the ropes were beginning to rub blisters on her wrists. She had no idea where she was, nor did she know why they had taken her. She just knew that she had never been so terrified in her life.
You want something to eat?
I'm not hungry.
You gotta eat something. You ain't had nothing since we brung you here.
I'm not hungry.
Oh, here. Try to eat something.
Keeping her mouth tightly shut, Lane turned her face away.
God damn it, woman, eat!
Leave her alone. If she don't want to eat, she don't have to eat.
She's gotta eat sometime. We ain't gonna get nothing from the governor if she starves herself to death.
You aren't going to get anything from the governor. Is that what this is all about? You think the governor is going to pay you to get me back?
Do you think he ain't? What father wouldn't pay to get his daughter back unharmed? Shit.
He's not my father. He's my uncle.
I know that, but father, uncle, it don't make no difference. He's gonna pay us a lot of money to get you back.
That is, as long as she's alive. That's why I'm trying to feed her.
I'm not hungry now. Maybe later.
That's all right by me. You don't want to eat, I ain't going to beg you. Ain't no skin off my ass, that's for sure. I'll just eat it myself.
Matt was sitting in a small cafe in Colorado Springs reading the daily newspaper.
No leads on missing woman. Porter foully murdered. The fate of Miss Lane McKenzie, niece of Governor John Longrout, is still unknown. The engineer, fireman, and conductor of the flyer reported that the young lady was taken from the governor's private car shortly after midnight on the 8th instant when the train stopped at Mustang Creek to take on water. That Miss McKenzie was the target of their scheme is not in question, as the engineer stated that they knew she was on the train and had no other purpose in mind but to take her. Travis Smith, the porter who was assigned to the governor's car, came to the young lady's defense and was murdered for his efforts. The railroad is offering a reward of $1,000 to anyone who can offer assistance in the safe recovery of Miss McKenzie. Damn.
I was told that I could find Matt Jensen in here.
The tone in the voice of the Inquisitor alerted Matt, and instantly he was ready for a confrontation. He dropped his hand to his pistol, though, as he was still sitting at the table, that move wasn't apparent at all.
I'm Matt Jensen.
Am I glad to have found you?
The man started toward Matt.
That's far enough.
I beg your pardon?
Who are you and why are you looking for me?
My name is James Cornett, Mr. Jensen. I represent the Denver and Rio Grande Railroad, and I have a message for you from the governor.
Come ahead.
The man, unaware that he had just been tested and passed, came the rest of the way across the floor, removing a folded piece of paper from his jacket pocket as he did so.
This is from the governor.
Matt, can you return to Denver soonest? As you may have heard by now, my niece, Lane McKenzie, was taken from my private car by armed men while she was returning home. I have received a ransom demand of $10,000. I can meet the demand, but would have no guarantee of the safe return of my niece. I urgently request that you make a personal effort to find and rescue my niece. If you would agree to undertake this assignment, I can furnish you with a state commission that will give you legal authority in any county in the state. In addition, the Denver and Rio Grande Railroad will provide you with a very generous reward. If you agree to the proposal, please accompany Mr. Cornett, the bearer of this message, back to the depot, where a private train awaits you. Sincerely, John Longrout, Governor of Colorado.
train made the passage from Colorado Springs to Denver in 1 hour and 22 minutes. When the abbreviated train pulled into the station, Matt was greeted by George Highgate, who Matt remembered was a member of the governor's staff.
Mr. Jensen!
Nodding his acknowledgement, Matt started toward him.
The governor is in the mansion, and he asked me to take you to him as soon as you arrive. Have you had lunch?
No, I haven't.
The governor anticipated that, sir. He will have lunch waiting for you.
Mr. Jensen, I'll take care of your horse. Would you like me to bring him down to the governor's mansion?
Yes, thank you. And thanks for coming to Colorado Springs to get me.
It was my honor, sir.
The governor's mansion was a two-story red brick Victorian house reached by a curved driveway that passed through a black wrought iron picket fence. Governor Rout met Matt in the foyer.
Thank you for coming, Matt. Please, join us in the dining room so we can discuss some business.
All right.
When Matt stepped into the dining room, he saw two other men.
Matt, this is General Palmer, president of the Denver and Rio Grande.
Palmer was a fastidiously dressed man, clean-shaven and with dark hair. He had commanded the 15th Pennsylvania Cavalry during the Civil War, and his experiences as the commander of a daring and highly successful group of cavalrymen had provided him with the kind of background he needed to be a scout for the Kansas Pacific Railroad in its expansion to the west. But when the Kansas Pacific decided to use a route other than the one Palmer had recommended, he left the company and started a railroad of his own. The Denver and Rio Grande was the result. General Palmer, always a personable man, met Matt with an extended hand.
Mr. Jensen, it's good at last to meet you, sir. I've heard a good many things about you.
Well, often things get exaggerated in the telling, General.
I appreciate your self-deprecating nature, young man. But I've heard too many stories from too many sources to doubt them. I'm glad you accepted the invitation.
And you have met my private secretary, Mr. Highgate.
Yes, I have.
This is awful. Simply awful.
Matt, as I said in the letter, this is all about my niece. I want you to find her, and I am prepared to offer you a position of state investigator, which will give you absolute legal authority in any county in the state. And, of course, pay a salary that is commensurate with that position.
And I am prepared to offer you a position as consultant to the railroad, with a one-time fee of $1,500.
That's very generous.
That is payable whether you find the young lady or not. If you do find her and return her safely, I will also pay a bonus of an additional $1,500.
That is exceptionally generous.
Just tell me that you'll do it. I cannot bear to think that I, in some way, might be responsible for this.
How can you hold yourself responsible for it, Governor?
I invited her out here.
John, don't be foolish. You are in no way responsible. On the contrary, you are taking every action possible to see her safe return.
Providing it is not too late for that. I just pray that she's still alive.
Governor, I believe I read in your letter that you had received a ransom demand?
Yes, for $10,000.
Then I'm sure she's still alive. They need her in order to extract that money from you.
Believe me, I would pay it in a minute if I could be sure it would guarantee her safe return. But I just don't know how well I can trust these people.
I have suggested that the governor pay it.
You have? Why?
Why? Isn't it obvious, man? Paying the ransom will assure her safe return.
I don't know. I think the governor's instinct is correct. Anyone who would do something like this is probably not very trustworthy. It's not good to sit back and wait for things to happen. It's better to make them happen.
I suppose there is some merit to what you're saying. But they were very specific when they spoke to me. They told me if the governor paid the ransom, they would release Miss McKenzie unharmed. But if we tried anything, such as calling in the law or trying to bring about a rescue, that they would kill her.
When they spoke to you?
Yes. That's how I learned of the ransom demand. They approached Mr. Highgate.
Why would they approach you?
Well, I suppose I'm the governor's private secretary. They knew that I had the ear of the governor.
That's true, I suppose. I must say that what surprises me is to think of someone like that even knowing there was such a position as secretary to the governor, let alone who it would be.
Yes, sir. I admit I was surprised as well, and somewhat frightened.
Why were you frightened? Did they threaten you?
No, not what you might call a direct threat, but they were rather desperate-looking men. Certainly not the kind of people I would normally encounter.
Beans again! Damn, I'm sick of beans.
It wouldn't be bad if we had some bacon to go with them.
Yeah, well, we ain't got no bacon. We ain't got no onion, no peppers, no nothing.
Eat your beans or don't eat them. I don't give a damn.
Just quit your bitching.
What are you laughing at?
How many cows have we done stolen in our lifetime? I know damn well we've rustled enough beef to start a full-size stampede, but we ain't got so much as a mouthful of meat to lay alongside our beans.
And you think that's funny?
Well, yeah, I do. Look, if you want meat, you can always go back to punching cows for 30 a month and found. We pert near always had meat then, but we didn't ever have no chance of getting a hold of some real money, though, did we?
Maybe you ain't noticed it, Teach, but we ain't exactly been getting a lot of money lately neither, have we? In fact, it's been quite a while since we've so much as put $1 in our pocket.
Oh, yeah, you do have a point there. What about Strayhorn? According to No-Nos, all we had to do was take this here girl off a train and money would be falling in our laps. Well, we took her, and we ain't got no money yet.
No-Nos has gone into town now to make all the arrangements. I expect when he comes back, he'll have the money.
Then what?
What do you mean, then what? We'll have the money.
No, I mean, then what about the woman? What are we gonna do with her?
Yeah, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
You said you would let me go.
Yeah, and we will, if there's no trouble.
What do you mean, no trouble?
Well now, Missy, just think about it for a minute. It ain't very likely they're gonna just hand over the money like they was buying a horse or something. More than likely, they're gonna be thinking about trying something so they can get you back and keep their money too. So until we got the money, and we know they ain't trying to pull no fast one on us, I reckon the best thing to do would be to just keep you for a while.
Hey, someone's coming!
Teach, Strayhorn, and Decker took out their pistols, then moved to the windows to look outside.
It's No-Nos.
I hope he's got the money.
Well, he ain't likely to have it with him, but maybe he's got it worked out how we can get it.
No-Nos dismounted, then came into the cabin.
Did you get the money?
No-Nos glared at Decker.
Well, did you?
Any food left?
Some beans.
No-Nos picked up a plate from the table. It had been Strayhorn's plate, and though he had eaten all the beans, the plate itself was still dirty. No-Nos paid no attention to the fact that the plate was dirty. Instead, he walked over to the little pot-bellied stove and began spooning out beans.
You ain't answered. Did you get the money or what?
No, I didn't get no money.
What happened?
The governor's called in Matt Jensen.
Matt Jensen?
Yeah, he's made him a state policeman.
What's a state policeman? I never heard of such a thing.
He's like a sheriff, only he ain't restricted to just one county. That means he can go anywhere in the state he wants.
Oh, that's bad.
Yeah, how bad can it be? He's only one man.
How bad? We've already lost 5 good men to that son of a bitch. Is that bad enough for you?
7 if you count Boone and Clay. Only Boone and Clay weren't no count anyhow, and neither was Hennessy or Taylor, if you want my way of thinking about it, which means we only lost 3 that was worth anything.
It don't seem right that one ordinary man could do that.
Well, Matt Jensen ain't exactly what you'd call an ordinary man.
Well, what do you mean?
He's more like a ghost than a regular man. I mean, no matter where we go, seems like he's there coming in as silent as smoke, raising hell. Then going away without so much as a scratch for all the shooting.
Well, I guess he's been pretty lucky, all right.
Lucky? Hell. Luck ain't got nothing to do with it. I'm here to tell you, Matt Jensen ain't no ordinary man.
You've run into him, Strayhorn. Teach says he's no ordinary man. What do you think?
What do I think? I think we need to kill the son of a bitch. That's what I think.
Easy enough to say. Not so easy to do. From the way you've been talking, don't sound to me like Matt Jensen will be the kind of man that dies easy.
Ah, bullshit. Put a bullet in his hide and he'll die just like everyone else.
And how come we ain't been able to kill him?
Because there ain't nobody gone about it right. First, you had Clay, but that don't count for much because he's a blowhard who thought he was better than he was. And then there's Hennessy and Taylor, and they were damn fools. If you do it right, Jensen can be killed just like any other man.
What are you telling us, Strayhorn? Are you saying that you'd be willing to go up against him?
Hell no! I ain't willing to go up against him. As far as I'm concerned, anyone who would go against him is a fool.
I thought you said he needed killing.
He does need killing. But what does going up against him have to do with it? Now look here, we don't need to make no sporting contest out of this. We ain't like Clay trying to be known as the fastest gun. All we want is for the son of a bitch to be dead. We don't care how he's killed or who kills him.
All right, so how are we gonna do it? Sneak up on him and shoot him in the back? I'm not sure you can even sneak up on someone like Matt Jensen. That son of a bitch has eyes in the back of his head.
Yeah, how are we gonna get close enough to kill him?
We ain't.
What do you mean? I thought you said he needed killing.
Oh, he does need killing. Only we ain't gonna do it. We gonna hire it done. That's where you come in.
Well, me? Wait a minute, what do you mean?
We're all in this together, ain't we? I mean, if Jensen is really coming after us, he's coming after every one of us, right?
Yeah, I guess so, but that still don't tell me why I'm the one that has to do it, and all alone.
Don't worry, I don't mean you have to kill him. But you are gonna have to fix it so we can kill him.
How am I supposed to do that?
First thing is, you gotta go back and see the man who helped us set up this kidnapping in the first place.
Won't do no good to see him, he ain't got money.
Didn't you say he works for the governor?
Yeah, he said he does. I don't know if he actually does or not, though. You ought to see him. He's a real funny looking fellow. Kind of tall, bald-headed, wears one of them pointy beards and those funny little glasses that just kind of perch on your nose. I wouldn't really know much about that, but I ain't the kind I could wear, that's for sure.
Oh my God, you're talking about Mr. Highgate.
Highgate, huh? That's good to know.
He ought to be able to get the money without any problems.
He ain't got $500. He told me he wouldn't be doing this if he didn't need the money so bad. That's why he wants us to make sure the girl don't get hurt.
Yeah, we know how much he cares about the girl. I tell you what, don't worry none about him having the money. In for a penny, in for a pound. You'll find some way to come up with it.
All right. I suppose I can get money from him, then what?
Then we'll put out the word that we're paying $500 to anyone who kills Matt Jensen. And we don't care how they do it.
Damn. I know somebody in Dorena who would do it.
Who?
That half-breed. I can't think of his name, but you'll know him if you ever see him. He's a short, bandy-legged fellow with a face that's so ugly, it would make a train take 5 miles of dirt road.
You talking about Goneril?
Yeah, Goneril. That's his name. Word is he'll kill anyone if you pay him.
Hold it. Are you saying this fella Goneril is good enough to go up against Matt Jensen?
Good ain't got nothing to do with it. Like as not, Jensen will never even see him.
What do you think he charges?
He once took out a U.S. Marshal for $200. I'm sure he'd go after Jensen for $500.
Yeah, maybe we ought to talk to him.
A lot of good that'll do.
What do you mean?
Well, how long do you think folks have been trying to kill this Jensen fella anyway? If they haven't done it up to now, this half-breed you're talking about ain't likely to get it done either.
Well, we don't lose nothing by him trying. Besides which, we got us an edge.
What sort of edge?
We got the girl. Jensen will be coming after her. All the breed has to do is stay between the girl and Jensen. You'll get his shot.
Good idea.
I got a question.
What?
I thought this whole thing was to get money for the girl. Now you say we're using her for bait. Where does the money come in?
Oh, we'll get the money all right. And you just give me an idea.
What's that?
No-nos, when you go to talk to this Highgate fella, you tell him to tell the governor that since he didn't listen to us, since he sent someone to kill us, the cost of getting his niece back alive has just gone up.
You mean ask him for more money?
Yes.
How much more?
Well, I'd say double what we're asking now. Instead of $10,000, we'll ask for $20,000.
Oh, I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know?
Highgate is sure that $10,000 is all we could get. I mean, he was pretty certain about that.
Well, we're going to ask for $10,000, and he was going to keep half of it, right? $5,000.
Yes.
Well, that's fine. You can still have $5,000. Only now, we'll keep $15,000.
Yeah, man, I like the way you think.
Mr. Highgate?
Highgate was sitting at his desk in the small office that was adjacent to the governor's larger office. He looked up as his name was called.
I'm sorry, Mr. Highgate, but a gentleman asked me to give you this note. He said it was very important and you would know what it was about.
He said I would know what it is about?
Yes, sir.
I have no idea what it's about. And whatever it is, it can't possibly be more important than the assignment I am carrying out for the governor.
Yes, sir. That's why I told him that he couldn't see you. But he was very insistent that I deliver this note to you, and to be honest, he was a very frightening-looking man, and what with no nose and all.
What did you say?
I said he was very insistent that I deliver this note to you.
No, not that. I mean, about no nose.
Oh, well,
He actually does have a nose, of course, but it's mashed so flat against his face that it looks as if he doesn't have one. As I say, he presents a very frightening visage.
Give me the note.
Cornet handed the note across the desk. He made no attempt to leave after Highgate took the note.
Why are you standing there?
I thought perhaps you might want to answer him.
Where is he now?
He's in the entry hall, sir.
Highgate nodded, then opened the note to read.
Mr. Highgate, we have to talk now. Meet me tonight at 9 o'clock in the Bucket of Blood Salute. Nelson.
Highgate wrote something on the paper and handed it back to Cornet.
Here, give this to him.
Very good, sir.
Highgate had written that he would meet with Nelson tonight at the time and place of Nelson's choosing. When he and Nelson had entered into their arrangement, he had established a regular schedule for a brief weekly meeting, at which time Nelson would provide him with information upon the well-being of the governor's niece, and he could provide Nelson with information regarding the status of the governor's willingness to pay the ransom. The time and place of this meeting tonight was unscheduled, and Highgate intended to give Nelson a piece of his mind. He simply would not put up with changes in this very carefully planned operation. The Bucket of Blood Saloon was in a senior part of Denver. Highgate had agreed to it as a meeting place because he had never been there before, and he was quite sure that he would not be recognized. He realized almost immediately, though, that he should have changed clothes before coming there. Although everyone else was in denims and work clothes, Highgate was wearing a suit. That made him stand out like a rose in a cabbage patch, and everyone in the saloon stared at him. Feeling extremely self-conscious, Highgate surveyed the room until he saw what he was looking for. No-Nose Nelson was sitting at a table alone in the far corner of the room.
Well, good evening, Mr. Highgate.
First of all, I thought it was clearly understood that we would have absolutely no contact other than that which we have already scheduled. Now you've come to me with this request for an unscheduled meeting? This is against the rules that we made, and I have little use for anyone who can't follow the rules.
Well, something has come up, and we figured we'd better talk to you about it.
And another thing, how did you know my name?
That is your name, ain't it?
Yes. How did you find out?
It don't matter how I find out. I know, and that's all I need to know.
What has come up? Has Miss McKenzie been harmed in any way?
You're the one who set this up, and you're worried about whether or not she's been harmed.
I am in this for the money. I do not want anyone hurt.
I'll be sure to tell her that you asked about her.
No, you mustn't. Don't you understand? She must never know that I am part of this. If word gets back to the governor that I was involved in her abduction, I don't know what would happen.
If she found out, why, you...
What? What are you going to say?
I was just going to say that I'm glad that you understand what might happen if the governor found out about you. Because that is exactly what will happen if you cross me now.
Cross you? I have no intention of crossing you. Why are you here, Mr. Nelson?
I'm here to get some money.
The governor has not authorized payment yet. I'm trying to convince him, but I am not having any luck.
He sent Matt Jensen after us, hasn't he?
You know about that?
Oh, I know about it.
I didn't have anything to do with that. I tried to talk him out of it.
Yeah, well, now you can deliver the governor a new message.
What is it?
Tell the governor that we are very disappointed that he didn't accept our first offer. Tell him the offer's changed. Now we want $20,000 instead of $10,000.
$20,000? No, you have no authority to change the amount. In case you have forgotten, I am the one who set this entire operation up. It was my idea and my plan, and I arrived at just the correct figure after very careful consideration. $10,000 is the most we can reasonably expect to get for this. And as long as I am in charge of this operation, that will continue to be the amount we seek.
Well, it's just that, Highgate. You ain't in charge no more, I am. And the amount I'm asking for is $20,000. Rest of our deal remains the same. You still get $5,000 for your share.
Why would that be? If by chance we could get more money, then my share should be proportionate.
Proportion? What the fuck does that mean?
It means that if your shares go up, mine should as well.
Bro, poor net. I'll give you this. You sure are a high-toned talker. Now, what I want you to do is go back to the governor and tell him the cost of getting his knees back unhurt is $20,000. Tell him that's because he brought Matt Jensen in. Also, and this is from you, I'll need $500 in cash right away.
What? I don't have $500.
Get it.
Where am I supposed to get it?
I don't know and I don't care. See, that's your problem, not mine. I'll be here same time tomorrow night. You'll be here with $500.
But no, that's impossible. Where am I supposed to get $500?
Like I told you, I don't care. But if you aren't here tomorrow night with $500, the governor's going to find out about your part in snatching his niece from the train.
No, dear God, no. You can't do that. I would go to prison.
Yeah, you would.
I wouldn't survive in prison. They would put me in a cell with some evil, lice-ridden man named Bubba. And he would do horrible things to my rectum. What am I to do?
You're to get $500, that's what you're to do. And if I were you, I'd get started right away.
$20,000?
Highgate informed Governor Rout of the new demand.
Yes, sir. That is what they're asking for now.
Why did they up the price?
I was told it's because you brought in Matt Jensen. Governor, you will forgive me for saying this, but you might remember that I advised you to pay the $10,000. If you had done so when I first asked, no doubt your niece would be safe now, and it would be over with. As it stands now, Miss McKenzie is still in danger, and the price for guaranteeing her safety has gone to $20,000.
No, George, that's where you're wrong. If I thought I could guarantee her safety, I would have paid the $10,000. But it wouldn't matter if they lowered the price to $5,000 or raised it to $100,000. Men like these cannot be trusted. No, sir. I'm convinced that the best possible course of action is to let Matt Jensen find these evil wretches and rescue Lane.
Highgate closed his eyes and pinched the bridge of his nose. Once, when he was a child, he had climbed a tree in order to reach a bird's nest. When he got even with the bird's nest, he started out on a limb after it. The farther out on the limb he climbed, the more frightened he became until he realized two things. One, he couldn't get back from the limb, and two, he was going to fall. That was exactly where Highgate was right now. He was out on a limb with No-Nos and his nefarious allies, and there was no coming back. He had no choice but to go all the way with them now.
I need $500.
I beg your pardon?
$500. I need $500.
George, that is a rather substantial sum. What on earth do you need it for?
The gentleman, and I use the word loosely, who was relaying the information to me about the status of Miss McKenzie, said that he can find out where she is for $500.
Do you think he can?
I believe he can, yes.
I don't know. I'm not inclined to trust such people. No, I think no.
But, Governor, surely you want what is best for Miss McKenzie.
Are you questioning my concern for my own niece?
No, sir, no, no, of course not. It's just that, well, were I in your condition, I would do everything I could to guarantee her safe return.
And I am. But I will not be swindled or cheated by the kind of men who would take advantage of something like this to line their own pockets. And my experience tells me that this is what your contact person is trying to do. Tell him thanks, but no thanks.
Highgate's head began spinning, and he had to sit down to keep from passing out. What was he going to do? If Highgate didn't get the $500, Nelson was going to tell the governor about Highgate's own involvement in this.
Oh, don't be so glum, George. I'm right about this. You'll see. Why, I believe we'll have Lane back fit as a fiddle in no time.
Yes, sir.